chair and went through a lot of battles. And the thing that I would like to emphasize is the, and I'm not, I don't have a DNR hat on here now. I have a senator hat or Bob Lazard hat, and somebody loves nothing fish, so this is not a DNR hat, is hoping that this body will retain the integrity of the Lazard Sam Saltair Heritage Council. Not because my name on it, believe me, but I just think that this is paramount with what the voters of this state voted for. And I can't emphasize this strong enough. And a lot of us, there's a lot of work, there's a lot of different, this thing started out as 3/16, 1/8, many different type of versions when this thing started out, for a lot of people that don't know how, and all the work we went through. There's one thing that I want to point out real quickly here. There might be some confusion about one section of the parks bill. Way back, contrary to what may have been said, even before in the 98, when this was going through, we knew, or I knew, that there's no way, in order to pass a bill, it takes 34 votes. Not 33, not 35. I often said, if you can count to 34, you can become a state senator. So one of the things that I knew when it came to parks, that the little parks in Minnesota had nothing. We had the state parks and we had the metro parks. And I think there's some confusion here that I would like to emphasize, because I know I was there, that we wanted to put something in for the little parks that had nothing in Minnesota, the way back, those in the back 40. So what we came out with, and this goes way back in the 90s, was an idea I had and some others had, but this is, I said, how can we do an equitable distribution if we're going to move this bill forward, and consequently, we have to pick up some votes. So it became 40, 40, and 20. It was 20% for the little guys in the back 40 of the Center Stumps District or my old district, where it was my replacement here, and from all over the state. So I really hope as you go forward that you retain this formula, which has been worked out. There was a lot of, even in the 2000s, there was a lot, and I wasn't in the Senate then, there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to come up with that formula, and there may be some efforts to change it. So I hope that you will stick with that formula of 40, 40, and 20. And I really believe that's important. It may not seem very important in the whole scheme of things, $109 million, but it is important to maintain what I think was the integrity of what we did. And Senator Stump, we served together. You know all the wars we went through. I won't take any more of your time with this, but went through a lot of wars, and this is it's a privilege for me to sit here and getting back in front of this body. Senator Cohen was, when we had touchy going, when to try to get this thing moving, Senator Cohen, I know what happened. Everybody knows what happened at that time, and Senator Cohen, and we made an agreement. Arts and Parks became into the formula and was passed with the with a coalition of the broadest bunch of people that I was ever been associated with and never thought I would be associated with. Senator Cohen does a lot of credit. I always say that because it was a I'm not trying to be that to be funny or cute, but the fact of the matter is, Senator Cohen, at the end, there was a lot of friction. Senator Cohen helped us out a lot on that. So that's all I want to say. I appreciate coming, Tennessee, to come up
Mr.
here.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman, this is totally off subject, but last night when I was driving home, or driving back to the cities, I was listening to this station that was, I'm not sure where, it was up north someplace, and they were talking about the jumping carp, and they said the only person that could make the jumping carp taste good would be the old trapper. And they're gonna see, I think, get in touch with you to see if you could, first of all, fry them up and see if that works, and then if that didn't work, maybe smoke them.
The only thing I ever thought about those flying carp would be, wouldn't it be fun at the end of a fly rod?
Mr. Chair, we'd stand for questions.
Okay. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would like to get some insight on who or what, how did the language for Pelican Lake on page 9 and 10 come to be?
Okay.
thanks.
Thank you, Senator Lessard. Thanks for coming back. Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, that was drafted in cooperation with the Department of Natural Resources in Ducks Unlimited, and the intent is to have Ducks Unlimited do some of the substantive work in terms of the project. Is there something more specific you would like?
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Becker, was there any testimony from Wright County on this other than Ducks Unlimited?
Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, no, there was no testimony by Wright County on this.
Well, Mr. Chair, I oppose the language because I don't think that there's people. I know there's people there that don't like the fact that the DNR is getting $2 million to put this drainage system in, and I've had people from Wright County, and I'll contact them because this is the first time I've seen it. So I'm very, very concerned about this language and don't like it in the bill.
Okay, thank you, Senator Saxon.
If there's no other questions, Mr. Chair, I'd move that Senate File 56 as amended pass and be sent to the Senate floor.
Okay, on that motion, all those in favor, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Becker, maybe I could shed a little different light on that particular project because we were part of that process, Senator Anderson. Mr. Becker, is that similar to the project that was funded some years ago in I want to say, is it Grant County? What's the lake? Where they have a dehydration system going on there as well, a pump system going on. Christina, that's right. That's the lake. Is it similar to that project?
Mr. Becker.
I think it is.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, yes, it is. It's a rough fish control type of project.
And Mr. Becker, thank you, Mr. Chair. Those projects, the water runs someplace. And downstream, I mean, there's an awful lot of work and a lot of time and effort that goes into these projects, if I remember right. The acquisition, not necessarily the land acquisition, but the property owners where this water comes to, once that particular area is dewatered or pumped dry for duck habitat, there's an awful lot. That's a large process. So this isn't something that just happened overnight, is it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this has been going on for a number of years. To take water out requires a permit, I believe, as well. It's a form of an appropriations permit, is my understanding.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Anderson, if I could, Mr. Chair, this might not be the same type of a project that Christina was. I'm talking about that where the water actually is released into a lake. So all the lakeshore owners, I know, had to be contacted by not only Ducks Unlimited but county commissioners. So I don't know if that's the same case here or not. I don't recall that when the proposal came through. So.
That's all I have.
Okay. We have Senator Saxog's motion that, I'm sorry, what is the file number?
56.
That House File 56, as amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
For Senator Champion.
It's right here.
All right, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, first to begin, this is the legacy bill. I'd move that adoption of the subcommittee report.
All right. Any discussion? All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say nay.
No.
Adopted.
Mr. Chairman, members, let me just offer a couple of comments about the bill. I'm happy to take questions about some of the details. And indicate I've got one minor amendment to one of the sections that Mr. Mueller is preparing. My intent in presentation of this bill this evening is an attempt to comport with what I think were promises made during the course of the 2008 public campaign. I'm trying to glance around the table. There are some members of this committee who were members when the effort started relative to the legacy amendment, not necessarily former Senator Lessard's first attempt in, I think, 1998-1999, but when the Senate Finance Committee began the substantive work that led to the initial passage in 2006, then the subsequent passage in 2007 with final passage, adoption of the final conference committee report, the first part of the 2008 session, and obviously the public campaign in November of 2008. And I guess it's my feeling that this is a somewhat different finance bill, to the extent that we have a lot of dedicated funds in the finance committee that we deal with, you know, throughout the state budget. But this is relatively unique to the extent that this is a constitutionally dedicated appropriations bill, finance bill. And the reason it, that I think makes it somewhat different is that promises were made during the course of the campaign, not just simply during the promulgation of the legislation throughout legislative sessions, but promises were made to the voters. 1.6 million people voted for the legacy amendment on the November ballot. I believe, and I don't know if this changed with last fall's election, but I think up to that point, 2008, more people voted for the legacy amendment than had ever voted for anything else on a Minnesota ballot, whether individual candidate or other constitutional provision. And I think that gives us a different obligation to try to maintain some legitimacy with the voters. So let me make a comment relative to some of these sections relative to that. That's why you see in this proposal the request for adoption of the Lessard-Sams Commission proposal. Obviously, there's been some discussion about whether or not there should be certain funding with some, I think their body has done some of that, but whether or not there should be funding of, say, other proposals in the metropolitan area, other proposals elsewhere around the state. There is no question that the sportsmen in Minnesota were asked to vote for this based upon the assumption that, that like the LCCMR, that recommendations would be followed by the state legislature. And I'm somebody who, although I certainly have used the outdoors, I haven't done much canoeing recently. I get stuck here during special sessions. But I've done a lot of canoeing over the years, utilized the lakes. To be fair, I'm not a fisherman or a hunter, but I understand the importance of those activities in the state of Minnesota, and particularly as to the intersection with this bill, what was assumed in its passage, not simply through the state legislature, but more importantly on the November ballot. And that's why you see presented to members what was proposed by the commission. I believe Senator Saxhog and Senator Ingebrigtsen can speak to this better than I can. And should also mention the work we do tonight, or what I propose we do, follows the groundwork laid by not only 4 years ago in the first legislative session to deal with the legacy, but Senator Ingebrigtsen's authorship 2 years ago and the work that he did. Certainly there are some differences suggested tonight from what Senator Ingebrigtsen did, but by and large, there's some many, many more similarities between what Senator Ingebrigtsen proposed 2 years ago and what's proposed tonight. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, certainly appreciate, first of all, the courtesy you and former Senator Koch offered me in working with the legacy bill 2 years ago as a member of the minority. And in turn, Senator Ingebrigtsen and I have spent a decent amount of time this session in promulgation of this effort. The others, let me make some comments about the other sections, and I'm going to do so in reference to what I just mentioned. The clean water section is one where, when I first took a look at what might be presented, to be real honest with members, I thought possibly we would look toward adoption of what the governor had proposed. The governor, Governor Dayton, has not—I shouldn't say put a lot of effort. That's unfair. Governor Dayton has not suggested a lot of things relative to the legacy bill. What he presented to the legislature was very significantly recommendations from the Clean Water Council. And I took a look at those recommendations, also took a look at some of the groundwater provisions. There's language in the Constitution that calls for groundwater protection. That tends to be somewhat, I think it would be fair to say, de-emphasized as opposed to some of the surface water kinds of issues. As I looked at some of what was presented to myself, presented to others, I felt appropriate to not emphasize groundwater over surface water, but to put a little bit more effort into the groundwater provisions than had possibly been the case. The third article I want to talk about is a place where I do believe, from everything I've heard, is probably the most contentious suggestion. And this is a place where I do suggest, following the governor's recommendation, 2 years ago, there was put into law a directive to the commissioner of the DNR that there be a committee convened to take a look at the parks and trails apportionment. And there's no question that in the promulgation of the legislation originally that parks and trails was something that was considered quite important. And I will tell you, just as somebody who, to be fair, is a metropolitan legislator, that I have concerns about what happens with metro parks as opposed to other parks. But I felt, given the governor's strong feeling, and he has emphasized this, that we should pass on the language as suggested by that commission, which is a division of the parks and trails money of 40% for the metro parks, 40% for the state parks, i.e. the DNR jurisdiction parks, and 20% for the regional parks. There's also language in the bill, as authored by Senator Thomas Soney, relative to setting a regional parks and trails commission. The fourth article is the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And members, if you'll allow me to offer a little bit of perspective and, to be fair, a little bit of complaint. With the credit collapse in 2008, obviously the budget problems over those next several years were incredibly difficult. And I think in the process, folks took a look at that section and felt that this was kind of an ability, given maybe some of the ambiguity, where it does talk about arts and history, but there's also the reference to cultural, to try to look for, you know, whatever definition somebody could suggest. But in the same way that the Lessard Commission was presented to voters as something that would be, I don't know if inviolate is quite the right word, but where the Lessard Commission was presented to voters in a certain way, with the intent to secure their support. The same thing happened with the arts section of the bill. And the members who were present during the legislative conversations of 5, 6, 7, 8 know full well that the arts component was a very critical part to passage of this bill out of this committee and was a very integral part of what was going to be presented. And just speaking personally, I had looked for an opportunity for many years, I mean, going back into the 90s, for some way to stabilize public support for arts and cultural programs in the state. And the promise that was made to that chunk of voters was that 50% of the monies in this section would go to the State Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils. Now, that represents approximately 1,500 organizations throughout the state. That's not just simply an appropriation to the State Arts Board. It's an appropriation to 1,500 organizations. So when you look at other appropriations proposed in the bill that are of a certain size, I'll suggest that at least insofar as individual arts organizations, almost all of them get less than some of the appropriations presented in this bill. But I think important to maintain that 50% because, again, that was a promise made to voters. And that's the rationale behind much of what you see here. Now, members, I think When you take a look at the spreadsheet, when you take a look at the language, members are going to have some question of where things are or are not. But I do think that what I'm presenting hopefully has some fairly broad support, and hope members would support it. Now, Mr. Chairman, I've kind of gone through a little bit longer than I had intended relative to providing my rationale. You know, we've heard the bill in the subcommittee a couple of times. I think I've talked to the members of the subcommittee extensively, less so to the other members of the full committee. And, Mr. Chairman, I think I probably should see if there are questions or comments members might have.
Any questions? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Cohen, earlier today I started to receive some notes specifically relating to the library funding, and they're telling me that there's a reduction for the public libraries in this bill. Is that accurate? And then where did you move those dollars?
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, when this bill passed the legislature, and maybe I'm sorry, can I just take it back a step? And I apologize, Senator Peterson. It's going to be kind of half an answer to your question. When this bill was being considered initially in the state legislature, when you took a look at where state dollars were going to go, even if we got back to the time of high surpluses in 99 and 2000, I don't think we'll see those days again, but even if we got back to those days, once you got past the significant budget drivers of K-12, higher education, health and human services, to a lesser extent public safety, environmental programs, parks programs, arts and cultural programs would get scraps. And so the intent was, relative to the arts and culture section, was to try to narrow the focus to places where the public support might have made a difference, as opposed to entities that were entirely government-operated that would have access to other kinds of funds. So the library proposal was never part of any of the original consideration. It was a proposal that came from the other body 4 years ago. I think they've done some very good work, to be honest with you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, in putting this bill together. If we're to maintain the 50% for the State Arts Board and the other area where you see significant support, which was always intended in those several years in the mid part of the decade, was the Historical Society. Some things are not funded as well as I would have hoped. Happy to discuss that as the bill progresses, but yes, there is less money for libraries.
Senator Peterson.
So, Senator Cohen, so a proper response would be just say those dollars were shifted to the Arts Board, and then that will be distributed to the Regional Arts Board based on kind of the same percentages. Is that where the money for the libraries went, was to the Arts Board?
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Peterson, you obviously you know that when you put together any proposal like this, that can you say that I don't mean to single out an organization. There's a new appropriation in here, as an example, for the African American Museum. That's been an unusual and interesting effort in Minneapolis, and so this is the first time you see an appropriation for that proposal in this bill, as opposed to, say, 2 years ago or 4 years ago. So did the library appropriation go to the arts or go to that museum or go to some of the other efforts that have been enhanced? I have an amendment, for instance, because one of the other original groups, the four entities that were considered in 5, 6, 7, 8, in this section of the bill, were Arts Board, Regional Arts Councils tied together, Historical Society, Public Broadcasting, and the Humanities Commission. And so I've recognized I made a mistake with the Humanities Commission. There, we want to keep some money at the bottom line, otherwise we run into problems in arguably the next biennium, because this budget's for the full two-year cycle. So I would hope that money is not touched other than through this amendment. But if you're going to try to comport with what was promised to the voters and what was discussed in this legislature, then you start mixing and matching the appropriations. Now, I'm happy, because I'll be honest, Mr. Chairman, members, I hesitate to speak about the other body, because we're not supposed to do that. In the conference committee process the next couple of days, there'll be a chance to engage with in that with the House, because the library proposal was originally a House proposal 4 years ago.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a curious, as I was going through the bill, Section 12 on page 34 talks about watershed restoration and protection strategies. And I was just wondering what was the it's under the Pollution Control Agency. Is it in conjunction with the local watershed districts, or is this?
Yeah, that's Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, that was the intent. Court. And I'm trying to remember, I don't know where is Mr. Knopf. I think, was this Senator Hoffman's? Yeah, this is Senator Hoffman's legislation that was heard in the Policy Committee, and I believe it was also heard in Senator Tomasoni's division. There's Senator Tomasoni. He can speak to that. And so the intent was to have that in conjunction with the locals.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman and members, it's on page 34 and page 35. It seems a little short in terms of scope. I would think that maybe Bowser would want to be involved in this versus the just a pollution control agency?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump.
Senator Collins.
Senator Hoffman's not here, and of course, I don't serve on Senator Tomasoni's division, so I'm going to ask Mr. Knopf just to add a perspective.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, you got to remember this.
Fight yourself for the record and welcome.
Oh, Greg Knopf, Senate Council Research and Fiscal Analysis. Thanks. Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, these watershed restoration protection strategy, this is all part of the Clean Water Legacy Act. This is just going to be a new section that's added to that act. The other agencies are all involved in the Clean Water Legacy Act and in the clean water programs, but this is a process that that the PCA would be involved in, and Bowser will be involved in these things. I mean, they develop the strategies as a part of their TMDL, and then you'll see if you look on page 35, section 13, you'll see that the board shall prepare and post on its website funding plans to prioritize potential non-point restoration and protection actions. So they are involved in it, and all of the agencies are involved in the Clean Water Legacy Act. This is one piece of it, kind of moving beyond the single TMDL to the broader wraps for a watershed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, just a curious question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does the state actually have watershed districts that actually covers all of the state?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sump, no. What I remember is about one-third of the state. Might be a little higher now. These are not watershed districts. These are watersheds. It's a physical area, the drainage area. It's not necessarily by district. Mm-hmm. It's the watershed area.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Knopf, would at least up in our area, it seems like the watershed districts are heavily involved in the management of water, and obviously they work with a lot of the other organizations. But where you do not have a watershed district that's organized, is this kind of how does this legislation come to play with those areas that are not under watershed districts?
Mr. Knapp.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, this is the, if you remember the TMDL process, the total max daily load, what this does is it, instead of doing water by water or whatever, they do them over a whole watershed. And so this is actually with a PCA under the Clean Water Act, they're required to do TMDLs. They've actually been moving this direction, and this continues that movement to go to a watershed-based approach when they're working on the TMDLs. They do this watershed, and these are strategies that are developed to clean up the waters that are listed on our impaired list. And so, if you look on page 35 at the top, you'll see the reporting, and you see the timelines each year. The PCA must complete wraps for at least 10% of the state's water management, the state's meter watersheds, shall be governed by the procedures. This is a part of the TMDL process that the agency, that's their responsibility. I mean, they work with the other agencies, but the ultimate responsibility is the PCA to develop those TMDLs, and this kind of gets you to the TMDL. It's a step that everybody thinks is a more logical one to do it by watershed rather than water by water, but then it ultimately leads to the TMDL that gets submitted to the US EPA.
Okay, any other questions?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I've got
Senator Cohen.
The A11 amendment.
All right, A11 amendment. Yes.
So which number is this one?
A11. So the A11 amendment is being passed out.
Thank you.
Senator Cohen offers the A11 amendment discussion.
Mr. Chairman, members, this does three things. First of all, Mr. Mueller pointed out that there was a technical mistake relative to the website on page 39, and it was meant to be 7,000 and 6,000, I believe, for the website. Is it?
Right.
Mr. Mueller, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Then the other two sections are mistakes I had made. One was in my discussion with Senator Sharon relative to what she's trying to accomplish with the Southern Children's Museum. It was meant to be 400, not 300. And I mentioned the mistake made with the Humanities Commission and would again emphasize to members that the Humanities Commission was always intended to be part of this from the initial discussion. I've talked about 2005, 2006. To be honest, it goes back to 2004, and that was always the intent. And this was the number that they had requested and was fully my intent to pass on. So I would move the A11 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen, just so that we're clear on the changes you're asking on line 39.15, is that where you wanted the change?
I have 39.16.
39.16.
Yeah. So 7,000. I'm sorry, Mr. Mueller. If I
can. Dan Mueller, Senate Council Research. Mr. Chairman, the change on line 39.16 is just to conform with the same numbers that are on line 39.15, just so the rider matches the total of the division.
All right. And there was another change, or is that the only oral amendment that you'd like to make at this time before we move the A11 amendment?
Mr. Chair, I think I was confused momentarily myself. I think there is no oral change. I think Senator Cohen was just simply identifying where the errors were, and that and Mr. Mueller has amplified that by saying that the correction on line 39.16 just conforms the rider with the overall appropriation in the bill.
Okay.
Mr. All right. Chairman, Mr. Nauman is just confirming I should try to keep quiet and just have people read the amendment.
Okay.
I apologize.
All right. So any other discussion on the A11? Senator Engelbrecht.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator, or maybe Fiscal, can you tell me what the total of this amendment is and what is this going to leave on the bottom line? Is it going to leave the 5%?
Mr. Mueller. No,
there's an additional amount here.
Mr. Chair and Senator Engelbrecht, and what this amendment does on lines 1.5 through 1.13 is it spends an additional $150,000 per year out of the arts fund. So that it will bring it is off the bottom line from the arts fund.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Engelbrecht.
Does this can you refer to the document that was handed out or not? Is that a little more clear?
Mr. Chairman, the
Mueller.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, in the spreadsheet that's been handed out here today, I believe, if you look on page 9 of the current spreadsheet under the Humanities Center, under program development, what the amendment does is changes it from $425,000 per year to $525,000. And then the Southern Minnesota Children's Museum would go from $150,000 per year up to $200,000 per year. So this additional amount, so that's an additional $150,000 per year for those two items, will come off the bottom line.
No, thank you.
It's on the amendment. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd renew my motion.
We have another technical amendment. Mr. Nauman.
Oh.
Mr. Chair, members, I think on line 1.6, we need an extra zero in the number 58,334,000.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I would incorporate that request from Mr. Nauman and would renew my motion.
To that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. Motion's adopted. Amendment's adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have the A-10 amendment, and Senator Cohen and all the movement going on around here today, I failed to talk to you about it. I was going to offer it in the subcommittee, but this is some language, just a language change, so maybe I should wait till they hand out the A-10 amendment.
The A-10 amendment, please. It's being handed out. And if you get
it, really has nothing, Mr. Chair, it really hasn't. I'll just wait till it's handed out to you.
All right. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the amendment, I do have a couple people that could testify if Senator Cohen has any questions with regards to this, or the committee members, Mr. Larson, Dan Larson, and Mr. Schoenbauer, if they would come up. And all it is, I believe, is just a little clarity on what's going on with regards to the Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails. So if I could have them come forward maybe and testify, in fact, maybe Mr. Larson could clarify it.
All right. If you identify yourself for the record, and it's my understanding he's going to take us through the A-10 amendment?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Dan Larson, representing the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Coalition, Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus today. This is just a simple amendment, essentially clarifying language, directing the U of M Center for Changing Landscapes to include updated data from the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Study in its detailed inventory. So we want the Center for Changing Landscapes to include, to reference data from the Greater Minnesota Regional Park and Trail Study in its updated or detailed inventory.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Larson, I understand that you have talked to the university contact or the university person about this particular amendment, and it's clear in their mind. Is that correct?
We did speak to
Mr. Larson.
Ms. Vogel, Ms. Mary Vogel. I think she's on board with this. She's in the room if you want her to come up and testify, but she did indicate to me that she's okay with the amendment.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would have no objection to the amendment.
All right. And Senator Ingebrigtsen moves the A-10 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, the other night Senator Ingebrigtsen asked where we were with the previous appropriations, and we fumbled a little bit, didn't have the numbers. We have the numbers, Senator Ingebrigtsen, for you tonight. So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mueller's got the exact numbers.
Mr. Mueller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ingebrigtsen, the first biennium that we appropriated the legacy funds, the total amount we appropriated was $458 million. That was for fiscal year 10 and 11. $147 million of that was from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, about $152 from the Clean Water Fund, $65 million from the Parks and Trails Fund, and Arts and Culture was $93 million. The next biennium under fiscal year 12 and 13, the one we're in right now, the total amount appropriated rose up all the way to $556.9 million. The big $100 million jump was because in the first biennium, we didn't have a full year of collecting the new sales tax in the first year of that biennium. So that's why there was a pretty big jump. The current biennium, it's hard to compare because with the Outdoor Heritage Fund, we're only appropriating 1 year of that in this bill. So, but if we were appropriating two full years at the same level we're doing right now, we would be at about $580 million in the biennium for the 14-15 biennium. We're not. We're at 485 in this bill. That's because it's missing about $95 million that would probably be appropriated next year out of the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
All right. Any other questions? Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just it was just a point that I wanted to make, just how this has been growing over the years and the kind of dollars that are going forward to these initiatives. And it's just quite certainly not astounding to me, but it is on an increase, and that should be a good sign. Whether you agree with it or not, it is a good sign that the economy is starting to rebound to the point where we're seeing some more revenue instead of minus revenue. So that's good. Thank you. Thank you for that.
And, Mr. Chairman, I have one other small amendment that I forgot about, the A8 amendment.
All right. They're going to pass out the A8 amendment. Senator Anderson, will you just wave at me once you have received the A8 amendment, please? All right.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members, this is I think a relatively minor amendment request by the Historical Society. They just want clarification that the grants may be used, as it indicates, for preservation of historic resources. They had requested this clarification, and I obviously am presenting it with no objection.
Any questions on the A8 amendment? Motion?
I'm sorry, I would move the amendment.
And to that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman, if there's no further discussion, I move that Senate File 1051 as amended be recommended to pass.
We have one small amendment that we have to make. Mr. Bonnard.
Mr. Chairman, after the committee agenda was posted, but today the Senate received the message from the House for House File 1183, the companion bill, which was then referred to the Finance Committee at the end of the session. So I think there'd be a two-step process. First, you want to amend House File 1183. By deleting everything and inserting the contents of the subcommittee report for Senate File 1051 as amended.
I would so move, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions to that motion? If none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
The motion is adopted.
And then, Mr. Chairman, the next motion would be to for the committee to recommend that House File 1183 as amended be recommended to pass.
I would make that motion, Mr. Chairman.
All those, to that motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay.
No.
Bill passes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. We have one bill, Mr. Chairman, if you.
How does this read?
It goes in that.
Before the period,
okay.
All right. Our last bill is going to be House File 826. Senator Dibble.
I want to reserve all the rights, though, on it.
Senator Dibble, welcome to the committee, your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
You're very efficient.
Please, if we could ask folks to keep their voices down, if you want to have conversation, please be so kind as to go out into the hallway because we still have Senate business to conduct. So it's my understanding, Senator Dibble, that we have to adopt a committee report.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, we might have to go through the same steps because this is now a House file. So, Mr. Bonner, you can help us with the proper motions.
Mr. Bonner.
Mr. Chairman, so the committee has the division report in front of it, and I'm sorry if I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, first the House file now, Mr. Bonner.
Mr. Chairman, I think the appropriate thing would be first to adopt the division report.
All right.
And then to amend the House file with the contents of the delete everything division report.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I'll move the division report for Senate File 783.
To that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed say nay. The committee report is adopted.
Mr. Chair and members, don't know what your pleasure is. Me to present the entire bill or just the portions that trigger the fiscal costs?
So, Mr. Chair, excuse me, Senator Dibble, if you give me just one moment, I just got to confer with Mr. Bonner. So, Senator Dibble, it is my understanding that we have to amend House File 826 with the delete everything, with the division report. Is that right, Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, I think, the motion would be to amend House File 826 by deleting everything and inserting the contents of the division report for Senate File 783.
All right. I will make that motion.
And to that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The amendment is adopted. All right. Now, it is my understanding or my thoughts, Senator Dibble, that we would just really concentrate on the financial matters.
All right.
As pertains to this bill. And so if you could focus our discussion around that, that would be helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm not sure if you have the fiscal note in front of you.
Mr. Chair, we don't have a fiscal note.
Give me one moment.
I have a...
If you give us one moment, they're going to check to see where the fiscal note is. Our apologies.
I have a fiscal note here. Which,
so it appears that no one has the fiscal note, correct?
It's a little bit dated, but...
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I might be able to assist this a little bit while they're searching for the fiscal note. This is the school bill, commonly referred to as the bullying bill. I know it's got a different title. The K-12 budget division wrestled with this question and made a decision to appropriate $500,000 a year. So the division, and that was incorporated in the K-12 omnibus bill. So it's my understanding that the costs that the division wrestled with and felt were appropriate to pay for the cost of this bill are contained in the K-12 omnibus bill. The other body made a similar choice when it wrestled with the question and appropriated a similar amount. I think when we get when we have the fiscal note in front of us, we will see that there are some additional costs that are identified. But I think the thinking on this is that the committee, the division wrestled with that question and identified the costs that it felt were appropriate to pay for. The rest would be internalized within the department.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Nauman, Senator Engelbrechtson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the fiscal note, Mr. Nauman, is this an ongoing cost or is this a one-time cost?
Mr. Chair and Senator Engelbrechtson, the committee recommended a $500,000 cost ongoing, and it tracked that in the spreadsheet.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
I actually have a copy of the fiscal note, and it's about the local impact, local fiscal impact, and it's about $20 million a year. I don't know. We'd like to make copies for the committee.
Yes, we will.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator,
Mr. Nauman.
Senator Fischbach has brought the local impact note, which, of course, is a different process that measures the costs on, I believe in this case, local school districts, which is, of course, different than the fiscal note process, which measures the fiscal effect on the state government.
And is my understanding that fiscal note is coming? Or?
Mr. Chair, I believe it's coming. Yes.
So in the meantime and in between time, I won't sing. I won't do anything like that unless any other committee members have some questions that you might have, you know, globally about this bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment I could offer. It does address some of the local impact issues. And this is
what number is that?
It's the A3 amendment, Mr.
A3 amendment. So if we would distribute the A3 amendment, that would be great.
I'll explain it best I can, but this is a language that's requested by Minnesota School Boards Association and others, and they want to help explain it. And helps. I'd invite them to the table as well.
So, Senator Dibble, if you can give us just one moment so that could be passed out, and then once the committee has it, it'd be great if you or maybe a testifier that you feel comfortable with could come up and explain that A3 amendment.
So, Mr. Chair and members, what this has to do with is the training that would be required by the bill for folks in the school who are going to be responsible for identifying and dealing with bullying. Then there's some effective date changes that help with some of the implementation pieces on line one. So the training would not be on an annual basis, but it would be on a three-year cycle, except that, of course, new employees to the schools would be trained, you know, within the year of their arrival.
And Senator Dibbles, just so you know that the committee is now in possession of the A3 amendment as well as the consolidated fiscal note.
Right. So Mr. Aronson can help explain a little bit more about the thinking behind the A3.
And to the testifier, welcome to the committee, and if you'd be so kind to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, may I just ask a technical question?
Yes. Senator Fischbach.
Have we adopted the language from House File? Because I see the committee report and House File 826, and then Senator Dibble mentioned that we were taking on the House language. So I'm just, and this looks like it's written to the House file, so I'm just curious if we have we're at.
Yeah, Senator Fischbach, we first adopted the committee report,
okay,
and then we had to substitute the delete everything amendment, which was the House file for the Senate file, if I'm correct, unless Mr. Bonner can correct me.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, I think if you look at the header on the A3 amendment, it sort of explains what's happened here. The motion is to amend the House file as amended by the division report, which is the delete everything division report that is numbered SS0783. So the Finance Committee can work from that document, but what it has done is to amend the House file to include the contents of the division report.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Which one should I be working from? The document.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fischbach, you should be working from the division report.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Again, sorry. Testifier was identifying yourself, and welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Roger Arntzen, and I represent the Elementary and the Secondary Principals Associations. And Senator Dibble has offered this amendment at our request. I think it's connected to the local impact fiscal note, as you're discussing that here as well. The initial draft of the bill required annual training of every staff member in the schools. And what this does is it allows us to spread that out over a cycle of 3 years. We think that's going to make it a lot more manageable for us and a lot more cost-effective as well. But there was a concern, just a policy concern, that new employees for sure get this training on bullying, which is a very significant issue in the K-12 arena. And so the amendment's crafted so that new employees have to have that training in the first year, Mr. Chair. So we're very pleased about this amendment and very thankful that Senators incorporated here. We did discuss this in Senator Wieger's division as well, and that this was one of the changes that we requested there, and that's how we come here, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions on the A3 amendment to testify? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dibble may be the testifier. Maybe this isn't for the amendment. Maybe this is for the overall bill, Mr. Chair, but
so it's okay for us to go forward with, and deal with the A3 amendment, and then if you have questions for the overall bill, you can then ask those questions at that time. Is that okay?
Thanks.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, to the testifier, he went away. Does anyone have an idea of how much this would actually save? I guess if you said it, I didn't quite catch it, but is there any idea? Because according to the local fiscal impact, it's like $20 million. So I'm just curious if we can quantify it.
Senator Dibble or Mr. Erickson? Ironson?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fischbach, I would not want to speculate about that, but I do think in terms of the training that we do on an annual basis with our employees in schools, which we're going to do in August and some of it throughout the year, if we don't have to do everybody in the first year, it makes it a lot more manageable for us. In terms of staffing and who's in the school at the time, we can bring in a third of the support staff and continue to operate. We don't have to provide subs for them and that kind of stuff. I think that's the thought in it, and that it was an easy way to do that.
And is it your thinking that with this amendment you can do it within the construct or the layout of how you do your other training, so there would not have to be any additional training? Is that your understanding?
Mr. Chairman, we're going to make every effort to accomplish that goal as you just described it.
Any other questions for the testifier? If not, Senator Dibble moves adoption of the A3 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The A3 amendment is adopted. Now, Senator Ingebrigtsen, you had some questions to the overall bill, and I wanted to make sure I give you the first opportunity to ask your questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Ingebrigtsen.
Senator Dibble, the cost of this is going to be on an ongoing basis. Can you tell me how much it's going to cost per pupil? I know this year in the budget, I think we're looking at $52 per pupil increase. One-time increase, and I'm led to believe that this is going to cost $32.90, right around there, for non-metro, $15.46 for outstate. Does that sound accurate?
Senator Dibble.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I mean, that presumes that this local impact note, is accurate. I don't think it's actually all that accurate. Just to talk about that for just a few minutes. The methodology that was used, and you can read the original local impact note and then the revised local impact note for yourself, was just kind of a survey monkey, an online tool that went out to school districts, and a fairly small subset of school districts responded. So no real effort on the part of MMB or Department of Education to really dig in and do some analysis or get some additional responses. There are several technical problems with how some of the questions were asked and the way that folks were able to respond. I have some analysis here of that. One of the the estimated annual cost to post policies within schools online with the state in accessible formats, et cetera. There was really no option given for no additional costs, no recognition of one-time costs. Likewise, with the estimated annual costs to discuss the policy with students, parents, staff, volunteers, et cetera. Again, no option. The only option school districts were given were cost options. No way to recognize just adding a little bit to the work that they're already doing in that regard. You know, time and time again, that's, you know, the problem, I find a real problem with the fiscal note. There's a, you know, a lot of school districts are doing a lot of this work already. Well, that's great. It should be recognized. They're doing similar work, you know, in other arenas around school safety and climate and discipline, et cetera. When you're talking about disseminating, you know, printing the policy or at least communicating the availability of the policy and sometimes those are costs that have an initial upfront cost but then scaled back significantly in subsequent years. You know, none of that was taken into account. So this, you know, $19 million per year, you know, a lot of folks who have taken a look at that think that's probably not completely accurate in you know, if you're taking that kind of cost across the entire state. Additionally, you know, there are some efforts going on in the conference committee to make sure that there are some dollars that are flexible enough, dollars that are going for safe schools and training and that sort of thing, to make sure that the flexibility for how locals spend those kinds of dollars is there. So, you know, that's my response to the local impact note. I mean, you know, it's very upsetting to see something like this come in, and it's been so, you know, the rigor behind the analysis has been not real great.
So, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator, then, so what would we do if the fiscal note is not clear enough in the author's mind? And we're talking about, and I think you just mentioned that they're already doing this type of training, or not this type of training, but similar training with regards to bullying going on in schools. It just seems like an awful lot of dollars. But you're saying there is a mechanism that is in place then to track these dollars, so we're not just adding X amount of dollars per pupil. I guess I don't know what you call it, per pupil. Statewide increase. I'm just wondering.
Well,
Senator Dibble,
Mr. Chair, you know, the local impact note is a measure of the local, you know, the local effort that we either do or don't provide an appropriation for. And you know, we have you know, the concept, of course, of local control and you know, giving school districts some resources and then some latitude and leeway to spend those resources as they see fit. You know, the dollars that show up on the more classic fiscal note, this fiscal note, you know, are the general fund or other kind of special revenue state dollars that we appropriate for specific purposes in state government. So I don't know exactly how to respond to your question, other than to say, you know, there are resources at the local level. I think I'm working with Senator Wieger and the conference committee to make sure that, you know, either through local levy authority or, you know, other mechanisms, schools have the ability to draw on resources that we provide through some of the levy buy down efforts or you know, some others to do this sort of.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Senator Dibble, would you say that MMB is just giving us a facade for a impact statement here? It really doesn't mean anything?
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair and members, you know, I think what MMB did was they simply passed back some information that was done through a survey. And didn't apply a ton of analysis to the work.
And Senator Anderson, I don't think he was saying that it's a facade, but nothing more than perhaps there's some questions about the information that's articulated there, and so I don't think that Senator Dibble was making that representation.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Dibble,
to be sure. You know, there will be additional effort that has to go on in schools and in school districts. As the the premise of the bill itself, that that bullying is a real problem and it's not being addressed in our schools, and it has real consequences. And that actually has costs. The failure to address bullying has real costs in terms of liability that schools entertain, but also in terms of outcomes, academic outcomes, health outcomes, safety costs, et cetera. I mean, you can't measure those sorts of things. That's called dynamic scoring. But there is, you know, there is a cost to failure to address these subjects.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, to that point, I have to admit I haven't read this whole bill yet. I guess it's an 18-page bill, and I think it's probably safe to assume that the length of the bill is contributing to the local impact cost, whatever that may end up being. But is there did you look at any model policies relating to some of these issues, or is there any model policies out there that school districts can use at this point, mm-hmm. rather than an 18-page bill? I'm guessing is what is kind of the question.
Senator Dibble,
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at. I mean, there is the bill itself allows for school districts to develop their own policies. It creates some criteria and standards around those. It does allow the Commissioner of Education to develop a model policy that school districts could opt for or look to as a template or an example or take pieces of it. It also has some language around some measuring and some tracking that goes on back at the Department of Education level, establishes a resource center, school climate center, as well as a school climate council, to assist schools with the process of adopting policies if they so desire, as well as the training piece. This is done free of charge for schools should they so desire to take advantage of those resources. It doesn't mandate any of the climate prevention work, but it encourages school districts to do that and makes those resources available through the Department of Education.
Senator Peterson, to the finance part of the bill.
Yeah, well, that was my question, and it sounds like the costs related to around the tracking and the training, these are things that basically the school districts aren't doing that right now. That's where the costs are coming from. I think that's what I heard, and I think that's satisfactory for me, I think so.
Senator Dibble. Yep. All right, Senator Stump.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question, and I apologize if I haven't wasn't in the Education Committee when this was presented, but on page 4 where they reference the School Climate Center, what exactly is that's on line 4.32?
What's the line again, Senator Stump?
Mr. Chairman, it's on 4.31 and 4.32. It talks about districts and schools may seek the assistance of the School Climate Center.
Mr.
Statutory reference.
Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair, members, that's an initiative of the governor with the Department of Education, and if you want to read the details on the School Climate Center, and that's actually what's responsible for most of the fiscal note, the traditional fiscal note, not the local impact note. So if you look back on page 16, section 12, that describes the School Climate Center. The services of the center would include assistance with developing policies, and a point of contact for schools who are looking for help on, data gathering, dissemination of summary data, reporting, et cetera, intervention, developing intervention and prevention programs, education and skill building, planning and advisory activities, best practices, working across different agencies, sectors, whether it's public safety or health or mental health, et cetera. When school districts are recovering from incidents of violence. And on that note, we have the Public Safety Center that's being reestablished in the Department of Public Safety. The School Climate Center is going to work cooperatively with the Public Safety Center. That's a center that's been around for a number of years. In years past, it was defunded, but it's being reestablished at the Department of Public Safety. That particular service center is designed to help schools respond to and prevent, you know, pretty serious cases of violence that we read about in the papers from time to time. And so those two are going to work together. Obviously, they have a common set of interests. And so they'll provide quite a bit of training. That's probably the bulk of the expense, because they'll go out and provide training to schools and all this technical support and assistance to schools at their request, at no charge, from what I understand.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to add that there's $1 million in the E-12 conference committee. Each body has recommended $1 million. That was recommended originally through the task force on bullying through the commissioner's office, and that is included at this point. And Senator Dibbles outlined the responsibilities as developed by that task force.
All right, thank you. Do you have a motion, Senator Dibble?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I would recommend that, I guess now it's this House file. Which House file is it?
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator Fischbach.
I would like a roll call on that final passage, whatever the.
Okay. All right. And just so that everyone knows that once Senator Dibble articulates the motion, we're going to wait a couple minutes for others to come in, because they wanted to be a part of the vote as well. And a roll call has been requested.
Also, Mr. Chair, I would recommend that House File 826, as amended, be recommended, pass, and referred to the floor.
All right. And so we'll wait a couple minutes for the others to come in, and we'll take the roll call.
Island Park.
Comfy, right?
Oh no.
The way it is, people.
Dry cash.
Hi.
Hi. I mean, I understand that you're a senator and you wait, and everybody has to wait for you, but we're waiting for a couple others. Then we'll be ready to go.
Oh, okay. We haven't went to the vote. We're just in the.
Awkward.
Senator Nina? We know you're here. Just wait 1 second.
Is Sarah Newman here?
I'm waiting for.
Policy Committee.
Oh, whoops.
Mr. Chair, the motion Senator Lori voted for was to return it to Policy Committee, right?
Funny guy.
It's the
Members, we're going to wait just a couple more minutes. There's one other person that wants to be here. Indicated she wants
Senator
to be here.
Newman.
Members, while we're waiting for the other two individuals to get here, I'm just going to give you a reminder of something for tomorrow, so don't take this as the sign for you to run out right now, but that we have an 8:30 meeting scheduled for tomorrow morning.
And Mr. Chair, I see that Senator Cohen left the room. I guess he was sitting. Where'd he go? Oh.
Me.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, you went that way last time I saw you. Very tricky. But Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I'm really surprised at the short notice, and you know that, Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, that is something that is really bothering. I mean, I don't even know if it's 12 hours. I think you broke the last record.
So just so that you all know, and then we'll go to Senator Cohen, we are prepared to vote.
And Mr. Chair, we can do that would be fine, but I just did want to ask Senator Cohen about that.
All right, so we'll vote, and then Senator Cohen, you can then respond afterwards if that's okay. All right, we're ready. The chair votes yes.
Anderson.
No.
Bonhoff. Dibble.
Yes.
Fishbach.
No.
Goodwin.
Yes.
Ingebrigtsen. Latz.
Yes.
Limmer.
Nope.
Lori.
Yes.
Miller.
No.
Newman.
Okay,
Nino.
No.
Pappas.
Yes.
Peterson.
No.
Saxog.
Yes.
Sieben. Stump.
Yes.
Tomasoni.
Yes.
Westrom.
No.
Uyghur.
Yes.
Cohen.
Yes.
Bonhoff. Newman. Sieben.
All right. There was 11 yeas and 8 nays. The bill is passed as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
All right. And Senator Cohen was going to respond to Senator Fishbach's inquiry around notice.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fishbach, first of all, I think the bill has been noticed, so within the 12 hours. Second, I hope this is not a bill of controversy. This is a bill of Senator Latz's relative to the data processing, the data collection list. Senator Latz, it's an issue for your conference committee. I think you had indicated you and Senator Ingebrigtsen had worked on this. But Senator Latz?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz?
And Senator Cohen, this is Senate File 235. It relates to civil commitment database information gathering and the court's data integration project for reporting through the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. It's currently federal law. There are substantial gaps in the database, and it will require some allocation of resources to obtain the civil commitment files and put them in electronic format and gather the other data within the court system for reporting purposes.
And Mr. Chairman,
and it is an issue that is coming up in the context of our Judiciary Omnibus Conference Committee.
And Senator Cohen?
Mr. Chairman, and I believe it passed, Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, I believe it passed your committee unanimously, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I think that particular bill did, yes.
Senator Fishbach?
Mr. Chair, Senator Latz, this bill hasn't been through the Finance Committee before, or it was contained, or, and help me understand this, because you gave an explanation of it, but when I look at the short version of it, it talks about firearms, lawful possession, and crime of violence, and so I'm dealing, I have not had the opportunity to read the bill, so I'm dealing with what the explanation is, and that has been a controversial issue here this year. So I want to make sure, because it seems like we have very short notice, and I'm wondering if it's already been through in your bill, why we're dealing with it again. And on such short notice. So if you could just help me understand what why we're dealing with this process the way we are.
Senator Letts.
Mr. Chair and Senator Fishbrick, I'm happy to do so. The Senate File 235 as a standalone bill contains mostly Senator Ortman's bill that came up in the context of the overall discussion about reducing gun violence. It also contains a few pieces from some of the other bills that had costs associated with them. What I have been trying to do, and I'm not sure if I can put all the pieces together here, but I've had conversations with Senator Ingebrigtsen, with Senator Ortman, Senator Champion on the Senate side, is to see if I can find a path for the non-controversial provisions that have a funding component. So Senate File 235 was sent as an independent bill from division up to the full Finance Committee. The funding for it is contained in the omnibus judicial budget bill, which is now in conference committee down the hall. So if I can get everyone that has a particular interest in that, I know everyone has some interest in this, but those have been most active on this particular issue, to agree that this consensus item will work. We would pull out the firearms-related stuff that's in the bill description and the title. There are a few other smaller pieces in there that did have some. Actually, they didn't have much controversy at all, but they were part of some larger bills that did. And just focus on the filling the gaps in the existing database with the existing scope of background checks. Then I'm hoping I can get a consensus through for this funding piece this year while it's a budget year. And then leave the broader discussions for the other pieces that were part of the overall discussion for a different year, different time. I'm not trying to get into any of those.
So, Senator Mr. Chair, Senator Letts, just quickly, this then, there are portions of this bill that are not in your judiciary bill, the way, and I'm hoping I'm following it, because I haven't been on any of the committees that heard these bills, so because I'm still wondering if those provisions are in the judiciary bill, why are we needing? I understand you're trying to build consensus, but if you've already got them in committee, in conference committee,
the policy,
then you may not have to build consensus in finance committee.
No,
Senator Letts.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fishbach, I wish it were so.
Okay,
but we carried the funding in the omnibus judiciary bill,
not the language,
but not the language.
Okay, that was Mr. Chair, Senator Letts. Thank you. That's where I was not clicking. Okay.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just like to make it very clear. Talking with Senator Letts earlier, that he was not bringing forward anything related to gun registration. This was strictly with regards to the background checks for the information that has been not necessarily lost, but not able to acquire the information for the commitment process of the folks that have been committed throughout the state since 1994 or 96 through 2008, which I think everybody wants that kind of information when it comes to background information. But he assured me, and I'm assuming that he's clear. He's made it very clear tonight that he's not going to have anything with regards to
policy.
Gun policy or gun restriction policy, as the majority leaders made it very clear that was not coming forward this year, as well as over in the House. So I just wanted to make that clear. That's the conversations that I had with Senator Letts. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I will state for the record that is actually true, accurate. It's exactly what I'm aiming for. There is one small piece in that bill relating to the expansion of the definition of crimes of violence, which was originally part of the prosecutor's package, but it had a bad impact in the Department of Corrections. That's also in Senate File 235 because it had a fiscal impact, It is my intention to delete that from Senate File 235 if it comes up tomorrow morning, and if I can make it part of the conference committee agreement on the judiciary budget. But I got to get a few hoops taken care of to make this happen. I don't know if I can. I'm not trying to reopen any debates. But if I can find a consensus and make it happen, I think it'd be worthy to do.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, as a ranking member on judiciary, I concur with the conversation that just occurred. The dollar amount that we're looking at is to address the gap on mental health records and those who have been deemed by the courts to be violent. Somehow that's not in any record data system that would be relied on to give someone a green flag on purchasing a gun. And it's high time we do that. And we might have an opportunity to do that. It doesn't go beyond, the legislation does not go beyond what Senator Latz has already said. It's an accurate depiction of what we're trying to do. It's a minimal but highly important element to our data records. That's necessary.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify so the record is clear, there's a second piece which the court calls a data integration project, which deals with existing criminal convictions that are also for some reason not properly electronified and transmittable to the BCA. But again, it's not an expansion of any qualifying factors or anything like that. It's existing data that simply needs to be captured in the proper format. Which by federal law we're supposed to be transmitting to the national system, but we just don't have it in the format that it can be done.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Mr. Chairman, now that we've had this discussion, and Senator Limmer, Senator Goodwin, and myself are on Senator Latz's committee, so we've heard the debate. We understand that this is something that's not meant to, as Senator Limmer has indicated, is something that's needed. With all this discussion, other than the notice requirement, we've had a full discussion of the bill. But I don't want to violate the notice requirement, Senator Fischbach, and so we'll be here at 8:30. Although I will, Mr. Chairman, if...
we can move.
Yeah.
2:35.
Mr. Chair, bang that gavel. They are out of line.
Mr. Chairman, I do want to point out, because Senator Fischbach has been... And rightfully so, concerned about how the agendas put together. There is one bill that we heard today. I do want to point out from members of the committee that was absolutely violative of the notice requirement, and that was Senator Weber's bill. And Senator Weber came to me right before the session started relative to this issue, which was of great importance to his district. It was storm relief. People heard the bill. Before we started the committee, Senator Weber and I forget the name of his state representative, who I think is also new, talked to myself and Mr. Nauman. And I felt, given the fact that it was related to storm relief, we would add it to the agenda. That's where I should have been chastised relative to the notice requirement.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I didn't catch that one. I would have. So don't be disappointed. I just didn't catch it.
Now, Mr. Chairman, the other thing...
So if we're going to have this great conversation between you two, so perhaps we don't have to be here for you guys to have it.
Mr. Chairman.
Let me be the third one involved.
Can we move adjournment?
Let's
move the bill.
Senator Ingeborson.
Just a comment with regards to Senator Cohen. You know, the emergency management issue is exactly what that is, an emergency. And, of course, in light of the tragedies and the temperature with the global warming issue that we talked about just yesterday, I'm glad to see that Senator Cohen is open to those types of things, because you just never know when that's going to happen. And
and Mr. Chairman, just
Senator Cohen,
quickly, I would expect this would be the last bill of the session. I'm not aware of anything else. Ms. Kaplan, are we aware of anything else? And so I would hope it would be a fairly quick meeting to help Senator Latz with what's a legitimately important issue.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
I believe that on the last committee meeting of the year, the chair actually brings treats.
Yeah.
So we want to